All right, thank you. And welcome to the Pacifica Strategic Planning Committee, December 5th, 2022. My name is Jim Dingman, and I'm going to call the meeting to order. John, can you do the roll call?
Yes, good evening, everybody. James Dingman.
Here.
Heather Gray. Heather's not here. Lawrence Reyes.
Lawrence is not here.
Julie Hewitt.
Here.
James McFadden.
Here.
James Sagerton. Elizabeth von Guten.
Here.
And Susan Young.
Here.
All right.
Okay.
That was five present.
All right. Thank you. So we have quorum. All right. Yes. I make a motion to excuse the people who aren't here.
There's no need to excuse people at committee meetings. That happens just in the board meetings.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Okay. Now, do we have minutes? Did you send out minutes, John?
I sent out minutes early this morning for the November 30th emergency session. I spelled Otis's name wrong, which I would like to take the opportunity to apologize for. And I will correct that. That's the only correction that's been brought to my attention.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well,
doing the best I can, Otis.
All right. I move that the minutes be approved. Any objections? Hearing none, let me move forward. So I'm going to read out the agenda. First item is a short, 2 minute, 3 minute comment on the process that's been initiated to apply for the CPB money. Secondly, after that is a brief report of the programming committee. If Heather's here, she can talk about it. After that is a report of the Strategic Planning Committee Working Group workshop, just a couple of minutes. Then the motion that we sent up to the board that didn't get heard, which was to begin national fundraising on a monthly basis to begin in December. That's just 3 minutes or 2 minutes. And then a discussion on good search, which is 10 minutes. I don't know if the person will come to talk about that. And then at 9 o'clock, 8:55, 9 o'clock, we'll be joined with Michael Sargent, who is a host at WBAI and who's been advising Berthold and others on podcasting. He is professionally involved in podcasting, and he'll be talking about that with us for the rest of the show. I believe Alex will join in and talk. I think Berthold has been invited too. I don't know if he's going to show up, but anyway, that'll be what we do. Then new business meeting dates adjourn, and then the question of executive session comes into play. But I guess we could decide if, you know, get into that later, but I have set up an executive session. Hopefully we'll take about a half hour or more. So are there any objections to this agenda? All right. Hearing none, let us proceed. One, let's start with the, application for the CPB. Last Friday, we had a brief meeting with the general manager of the University of New Mexico radio station, Richard Town. And he was extremely helpful. Several of us participated, including Stephanie. And I would say that the result is positive. Ursula Rudenberg, we want to thank for helping to facilitate this meeting. And I guess what we're going to be able to do with Richard, Richards has volunteered to help us walk through the process. So those of you who are skeptical about this, we can definitely schedule meetings with Richard and other managers throughout the affiliate network who receive money from the CPB are going to help us out. Ursula is going to reach out to them. So I have to say it was a very positive meeting. Any comments or questions about this? All right. Hearing none, let me continue. Now there was, Heather's not here, so I'm going to skip the report of the programming committee, what they're up to. The next item agenda was a report of the Pacifica Strategic Planning Committee Working Group Workshop. The next meeting will be next week. We're going to talk more, continue about Gen Z. It's posted at KPTFX. And on the 17th of December, we're going to be having with the Technology Task Force a meeting with Professor Dolores Inez Casillas from University of Santa Barbara. And she'll be talking about Spanish radio in the United States, Spanish language radio in the United States. Any comments or questions about that? All right, hearing none, let me proceed. The motion we did not talk about on the PNB meeting last week, an open session, was a motion to begin monthly fundraising as of this month coming, one we're in right now. And that will be discussed, I assume, at the next meeting. The purpose of it was to begin providing extra revenue for the national office to pay down the payables. So I just put that in there. We haven't gotten to the point where we're going to discuss and argue it, but that's, I just wanted to report on that. Any comments or questions about that before I proceed? All right, hearing none, let me move on to the next item. Now, we are going to have Daryl McPherson come and talk about the issue of good search, and he's not here. And so perhaps we'll have to postpone that till later. He's in another meeting right now. He's in the fundraising committee at WBAI. So I will pass on that. And let's move to podcasting. Now, as I mentioned to you, I don't know if we've been joined by Michael Sargent. Michael, I don't see him on the participant thing here. But, Alex, why don't you start this off since you wanted us to talk about podcasting tonight?
Okay, but while I'm talking, maybe somebody could at least call Berthold and implore him to get on the call, because he knows more about this than anybody, I think. At least as to where the whole project sits at this point. Okay, podcasting. This was one of the initiatives that we proposed in the Strategic Planning Committee, at least since last year, possibly even before last year, I forget. And a lot of the preliminary work that was done in this area came out of WBAI, but certainly there was other work elsewhere. And the idea was that we should be able to do the same thing that many of the NPR stations are doing and use podcasting as one of our major revenue generators. And the way they do that is you create a subscription service for podcasts. And it sounds simple, not so easy to implement, because first of all, you have to go through all the legal requirements to create contracts with the producers, in which obviously Pacifica has to have some of the rights to the podcast.
Recording in progress.
Whoops. Sorry, that was me.
But the producers also should have some of the rights to the podcast, because they're the ones doing it. There was a model contract that was drawn up, and we were waiting for our FCC attorney to sign off on that. Unfortunately, our FCC attorney was not getting paid. So as far as I know, we're still waiting on that. And I'm not sure that signing off on those kind of contracts actually requires an FCC attorney. Maybe any attorney who's familiar with license and contract issues can do it, but that's something we'd have to look at and perhaps ask our legal counsel about. Those of us at WBAI, on the WBAI LSB, were fortunate to hear at least two different presentations on podcasting that included a PowerPoint and a discussion by someone who had been an intern at WBAI who did a hell of a lot of research and knew pretty much all the ins and outs of podcasting. Now, when I say that it could be a major source of revenue, it also requires an initial investment because it doesn't come free. You have to invest in a certain infrastructure to do podcasting properly. You have to be able to market it. And you can't just take an on-air program and say that, you know, that's a podcast and send it over to one of the podcast services like, I forget, Substack or I don't know, whatever they're called. There's a whole bunch of them. There's at least half a dozen I'm aware of. I'm sure there's probably more. So it's a work in progress. Like I said, it will take an investment. I think this is the kind of investment that we might be able to interest a major donor in giving us some seed money if we could show that we're sort of ready to go as soon as we get the original seed money in place. So that was the basic idea. I know that WNYC, which is the big NPR station in New York area, they now get approximately one third of their revenue from podcast subscriptions. I don't think we'll be so fortunate, at least in the beginning, but I think it's definitely something worth pursuing, and I would say that should be the next priority of this committee and of the Pacifica National Board.
All right, thank you, Alex. Bertold has joined us. Bertold, we were just discussing podcasting. Alex was talking about it. Please chime in.
Well, I think that we're very short-sighted in not figuring out how, as a network, to go and do this. I'll be brief because I'm not really well organized, because I was expecting like Max Sargent, who had some extensive meeting with us, who's coming in soon, would be able to explain exactly. I mean, he's an expert. He's making, you know, six digits, you know, doing this for a living. And but I think that most of our stations, we've had some decent website, but our national website is awful. It's embarrassing. And I think that's the website that we should use as a hub to do podcasts. And, the problem with the podcast is certain rules. There are a certain amount of, you know, the quality of the sound. You have to have some people who are editing the show, the sounds, while removing things that should not be on the podcast and then cleaning it up and making it ready and posting it on a regular basis. So we did have somebody who gave us some money, seed money to pay somebody to run this thing. And then when we went out of money, we started paying her late. She quit. So, you know, everything that we did kind of fell apart. So I think as a whole network, it's not going to cost us much. For BAI, it cost me a lot. But as a network, it's not going to cost us much if we could just, you know, we do. I have a brand new website, Pacifica.org, and have that be the hub that hosts any podcast from all the five stations and bundle them in a way that you can offer political, arts, you know, or music or whatever it is that we do. You know, we can offer bundles of them. That's how people listen to them and make money. Not only make money by actually offering the content, but also offering for them to put PSAs on the website. You know, so that's why it was complicated, because we have to have something designed so that we can get money from people who subscribe, and at the same time, we can get money from PSAs, so which are two different platforms. You know, the idea was initially to just give these things away for free. I mean, Leonard Lopez had 1 million downloads like last year already. So we're going to use Leonard Lopez as the front, you know, to promote WBI podcast, but we should just do that for the network. I know there are a few good podcasts that Ursula has, to the affiliates and stuff like that. And I know that they're not really all real podcasts because, you know, to explanation to my social media person who quit over 2 years, I still don't get the details. I don't really get it, but you know, cutting and slicing and making a show into a podcast is very complicated, and it's very precise, and you know, people are very finicky about what is a podcast. And then I think that's the way we should go. Each station puts a little money, a few hundred dollars, you know, and you know, and then we see if we can get I would say pro bono young web designers and stuff like that. And then I think $10,000 should do the whole trick. That's basically all I have to say. And then I hope Mike Sargent, who is getting ready to make the presentation, can really break it down for us. You know, I had all kind of questions. You know, he told us what we were doing wrong. We were doing quite a few things wrong, a few things we were not actually doing at all. And he can actually break it down and give you some directions.
All right. Thank you, Bertold. Susan, you have a comment or question before we start with Michael?
Yeah, I do. Let's pretend that I am a potential major donor during this conversation, okay? What I have heard is a rambling conversation about how things have fallen apart. So if I were to receive a proposal to fund something, I would want to know exactly what that is, how it will be done, how much it costs. So I'm hoping that Mr. Sargent can help us with that.
All right. Thank you.
I think that is an excellent point. You are absolutely right. Our major donor kind of had an issue with, you know, the stock market or whatever, and then he stopped donating regularly, you know, but our podcast was launching. But we knew that we needed more people, you know, to edit the shows and stuff like that. And our social media person was actually training a few interns to curate the podcast. So, Susan, you're absolutely right. It has to be a plan, has to be specific. It has to be a budget. It has to be some timeline. Otherwise, you know, if I was a major donor, I would not give any money either.
All right. Thank you, Bertolt. Susan, you have a comment before we bring Michael on?
No.
No, Susan Goodwin.
Sorry.
Yeah, I do. I was just going to toss out there, you know, I don't know if any of you all know my husband, Chip. He does Community Watch and Comment on Fridays. He's a long supporter of the station and me. And he is a computer guy. He's currently designing the website for SNCC. And he just might be someone, and he wouldn't charge. I shouldn't speak for him so freely, but, you know, that's what I do. But it might be worth checking in with him to sort of just scope out, you know, what's the to-do list to get us where we want to be. Cause I don't think we have a choice on podcasting. We have to do it. There are just too many people, especially young people. That's their preferred way to listen. And so, you know, in podcasting, what we're trying to do is hang on to people who prefer to listen that way as well as grow. I don't think we have a choice. We have to.
All right. Thank you, Susan. All right. Michael, they're waiting for you, Mike.
Well, okay.
So why don't you, let's get going. Michael Sargent, of course, is a longtime producer at BAI, a film critic. He does a show Night Shift, and I've had the great pleasure of knowing Michael for many years. So, Michael, just get into it, babe.
Well, okay.
Well, let me also add that please. Michael does this for a living. You know, in the commercial world, that's, you know, he has his own podcast, and then he curates podcasts and works for a company where they ask him for advice on this kind of stuff. Am I wrong, Michael?
Can I say something before Michael starts?
Please.
Go on, Alex.
The other thing about podcasting is the idea of a subscription service, because subscriptions is the way to go to generate revenue in many areas these days. It's taking over from, pay as you go kind of things and people are used to subscriptions. You subscribe to Netflix, you subscribe to this, you subscribe to that. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's become, very common and very popular, especially among, Gen Z and even younger. So, that's the other thing about podcasting to keep in mind.
All right. Thank you, Alex. Okay. Michael, go on, Mike.
Well, Alex is very right. I mean, I'm going to give you just a little bit of a context of where I'm coming from. You know, I'm kind of being thrown in here. So I don't completely know what all your questions are, but I'll kind of give you an overview. I'll tell you a little of who I am and what I do, and then my overview and what my thoughts are on what we need to do, as a network, really to become a presence in the podcast scene. So, what I do for a living is I work for a company called Futuro Media, which is a, nonprofit, it's a Latina, owned company. Maria Henihosta, I don't know if any of you know who she is. She's a pretty well-known journalist. They put out their flagship podcast is called Latino USA. They put out several other podcasts. They also produce podcasts for other, companies, for Obama and some other people. They just produced, they just won a Pulitzer. Let's put it like that. So they're very, dominant in the scene. So my job there is I'm the senior, production manager. I basically keep the trains running for the flagship podcast. What I did since I came there is, they, like many, many organizations and like I think many, many nonprofits, and I think BAI, I don't know all the other stations included, is that, you know, the ambition often outweighs the organization to make it happen. You know, the what needs to be in place is not in place. So when I came in, I changed their whole workflow so that things work a lot better. It was not rocket science, but just from coming in from an objective point of view, I was able to make a lot of changes there. So they love me. And, I came there because, without going into a whole lot of details, I pivoted in my career because I have had a long career in radio, but to me, podcasts is just radio to go. Okay. And it's only called podcast because of the iPod. So as opposed to a broadcast, it's a podcast. So keeping that in mind, just to the point that Alex made, we live in an a la carte society. So when he's talking about subscription, it's people subscribing to things that they like, things that they love. And I'm just saying this at the outset, whatever we do, we have to acknowledge like who we're going after. What is the audience we want to bring in? Yes, we may want to bring in young people, but that's very broad. You know, the thing about podcasts and the wonderful thing about podcasts is that it's very specific. It can go after different. If you are into, you know, oatmeal delumpifiers, there's a podcast about oatmeal delumpifiers and you could listen every week. So people are very much, the reasons podcasts have supplanted radio in many ways is that people can just pick and choose what they want, listen to it when they want, the downloads, and that subscription that you're talking about, Alex, is them subscribing to a download so that when it comes out, it comes out. In terms of monetizing, I'll get to that in a minute. But I do think overall...
Michael?
Yes, yes.
Can I ask you a quick question? The way we, WBI, was starting to set up our podcast is so that once you subscribe or when you even just sign in and not subscribing, it automatically sends it to your iPhone. And then I didn't even know what I was doing, but this was coming to my iPhone, which was like amazing because you don't even have to remember. And then you get the podcast.
Okay. Well, yes, let's put it this way. That's the subscription model for like a station. And this comes back to what I was about to ask is really what you want to do here. Okay. I think the thing that makes the most sense is to create a network, pick, you know, whatever it is, a certain amount of shows, half a dozen shows, whether it's from the station or from the network. And then that's what we promote. You know, I think you need to start, manageable, you know, with a certain amount of shows that you learn, you know, from that, build your audience from there. but no, very specific. You want, if it, whether it's your strongest shows, whether it's, I mean, if I could share my screen, I'll show you some statistics. You know, I get a lot of, you know, there's a lot of information comes across the desk because I'm in management. So
go on, Michael, you can share.
Okay, great. So point I'm going to make is that even though, let me back up a little bit to say, so you, in terms of creating a network or creating what you, what your presence is going to be, this kind of to me comes back to, I think part of the problem, I don't know all the stations, but I think part of the problem for us to gain, an audience we need to be relevant. And we are relevant in different kinds of programming, in the fact that we have so many different kinds of programming, but we need to reach the people who the programming we're doing is relevant to, whether they're young or old. Now, that being said, I know at WBAI and I know about radio in general definitely skews older, but there's differences to that demographic. And I'm going to share my screen right now just to show you something from Nielsen that I thought was a little bit surprising. Okay. Can you all see my screen?
Yep.
All right. So this is now, of course, because I work at Latino USA and Futuro Media is the company. We get everything about Hispanic consumers. So this tells us like everything that's going on with Hispanic consumers, what their monthly reach is, you know, where they're listening on radio, listening on smartphone, TV connected devices, PCs. This is how people listen today. You know, even if it's a radio show, because every radio station has their shows as podcasts, every public radio station, every commercial radio station, podcasting is just part of how it's part of the delivery system now. So you need to understand the delivery system. So that being said, and we can have a whole conversation about platforms, that's a separate conversation. I'm just speaking in broad strokes here. But look at this page. This is something that I, you know, was a little surprising to me. It says radio is the center of the total audio universe. Now, here's the thing. Nielsen, of course, is obviously radio-centric because of what they are and how they work and whatnot. But the thing is about radio, and it depends on the market we're in. Podcasts, the great thing about podcasts and online is that we can reach a global audience. We can reach a nationwide audience. So who we want to go after, in my opinion, is very important. The kinds of shows, if there's a show that's very popular in LA or Texas or DC or New York, it's probably going to be popular other places, but those other places need to know about it. To me, this is all my opinion. This needs to be our podcast, whatever we do with podcasts, it needs to be showcasing our network. And right now, okay, I could tell you now, I do, besides what I do for my day gig, I do two shows at WBAI. I also have two podcasts. One of the podcasts I do, it's called Brown and Black. Okay. Now it's a podcast I've been doing with a couple of years now with, I'm Black. I'm African American. He's Latino. So it's Brown and Black. And so we talk about the intersection between race and pop culture. He's also a film critic as well. Now the show has done very well. We just won a Webby and all of that. And we got picked up by a network. Okay. And this network came to us because they want to expand. They want to reach broad there. And they're a primarily a Latino podcast network. They're called Sonoro. But if you look at Sonoro, just like all the other networks, just like Apple, Amazon, all of them, even Spotify and, you know, all of them in the beginning needed content. They needed content to feed to their audience. The beauty of a radio station is we already have the content. All we have to do is curate the content and decide who we want to reach and then how to reach it. The other thing about looking at this and this is for specifically Hispanic audience. But if you look at what they're saying here and the age range and who's listening, and this is just the Hispanic market, you know, and that could be one program that we take our best, Latino program and we highlight that. That's one program. That's one market. That's one demo. That's one way we're going to do. And that's just one. And if we have six and we have one that covers this and one's political and one's arts and one's, you know, in my opinion, that's the beauty of what we do. We're not just one thing. We don't just do one kind of thing. And when I say we, I'm talking about Pacifica. So I say all that now to also say that coming back to the delivery system, you know, Latinos listen to radio more than any other demo. More than any other demo. And that is something I did not know. But again, the New York is a very specific market because we don't have the drive. So people there, it's more podcast, because that's how people are in subways and whatnot and traveling. You know, you're not picking up a signal. You have something that you've downloaded, you've subscribed to that you're going to listen to. But around the country, most places where they are driving, radio is still a component, you know, but even there, a lot of people are listening to podcasts as, and again, it's supplanting radio. So in my opinion, all we're really trying to do is introduce to people who would want to listen to this. You know, they're listening to radio, like podcast radio, same thing. There's no difference in my opinion. The only difference is podcasts aren't live, even though there are some that are live and done live. And again, that's just imitating radio. So it's really a question of we're expanding the audience. And then how do we want to do that? Like, who do we want to reach? Pick what are our six programs we want to go that we know all have strong audiences. And then each one of them, you know, we just do it. There's a series of, I could go over a workflow of how we would promote it and audiograms and things like that. But the point is in my opinion, we just have to decide, okay, this is what we want to do. We want to build out this network. We want to show how relevant we are to these different communities, to these different audiences, just like all these other podcasts have. The reason podcasts have gotten so big is because people who can find what they want, and they need to know that we have something that they want. We have audiences that I think we're serving. So I have.
So Michael.
Yes.
I'm sorry. For everyone else, we drilled Michael for like 2 hours, a couple of months back. So I had a few questions that I had pertinent. And so one of them is, how do you identify and how do you target and reach the audience once you identify podcasts? How does that work?
Okay. Well, for instance, okay, let's give me like a show. Give me what's a popular show. What show would you?
Leonard Lope, the one you chose.
Leonard Lope. Now, who do you think his audience is?
I would say middle class, white, intellectuals, intellectuals, middle class in general. WNYC, WNYC, which is NPR. People who are middle of the road wants to listen to a little mix of things. They don't want to be disturbed too much, but they still want to get some information and they want to get a little shaken up.
All right. Well, my opinion on that, just off the top of my head, if you've got a show like that, first of all, you want to highlight what he does. So whether it's quotes from him, guests he has, things like that, part of your social media campaign and your just how you want to get the word out there anywhere, whether it's, and again, each demo you're going after, it has a different thing. No one under 30 is on Facebook. Okay. But, you know, over 30 is, Twitter, you know, who knows what's going to happen with that, but still that's got a certain demo. You know, each one of the social medias have a different demo. So if you have identified this is the audience, I don't think it's too hard to figure out where that audience is. Where does that audience live? What else do they do? And who, in terms of growing his show and growing his audience, does he have guests on?
Yes, he has guests on. And usually those guests have a whole bunch of people,
who are their followers. Yeah. Right. Again, in my opinion, it's all got to be a coordinated effort. If you say, okay, over the next 3-6 months, what we're going to do with Leonard Lope, we're going to take, you know, a bunch of different quotes from him, turn them into memes, turn these into audiograms. We're going to, book X kind of guests and we're going to do everything we can to market that. And again, we're not talking about spending money. We're talking about who, if he's got people working with him or for him, it's really just coordinating the efforts towards getting that audience out there. Now, in terms of, you know, monetizing it, that's a separate conversation, but growing that audience, in my opinion, the first thing would be to build and grow these audiences and grow our presence as a podcast network. And in my opinion, also, we have to have some sort of a unified, you know, mission or, you know, identity or as they say nowadays, brand. You know, we have to brand ourselves as something, as an alternative. You know, if we were alternative radio, then we should be alternative podcasting. We should be something.
So Michael, thank you for bringing that up again. By the way, I'm interrupting just for the sake of other people because you already answered those questions for me.
Sorry.
You told us that WBI, we were all over the place. And I was like, are you kidding? I thought I was very focused. What did you mean by that? Like, what does that mean? I understand brand, but like, I thought we were trying to do something, but you told us we are all over the place. We should have used Leonard Lope as the lead.
Yes.
And then keep it narrowed and straight. And yes. And I didn't understand what you were saying.
All right. Well, what I was trying to say, and this is to the point I was making before, meaning, as opposed to doing, let's say you want to launch just one show. Okay. And it's Leonard Lope and you're going to do everything with him. He's the incubator. Okay. I'm saying that coordinate your efforts into, I think it should be several shows, but coordinate your efforts into just those several shows. Like put all your attention into those. That's it for the next 3 months, next 6 months. Those are the ones we're promoting. There's other stuff waiting in the wings. There are other things we want to do, but we need to learn and build from, in my opinion, something. I don't think you should get too big too fast. I think you need to build. And once you've got a system that's working, then you can like expand the machine. That's my opinion because I feel it's, that's what I meant by the ambition versus the organization. Meaning if we don't have the structure in place, we can't all of a sudden launch 20 programs. That's
so why do we need money? Because, you know, it was clear to me that we were short of money because, when I thought we were doing podcasting on BAI, you know, you and Hannah told me, you know, you are trying to do podcasts. Podcast needs to be curated and it has to have a certain thing, has to be clear, has to be high quality.
Yeah.
Can you really, really break it down? Like, don't
all
be
right,
nice.
Okay.
Don't be nice to us. You know, really,
all right,
really.
All right. I'll be nice. Now I'm.
Well, Michael, also people are listening to you and I'm getting text messages.
What?
Just identify who you are. And what organization you're talking about, like an ID, if you will, before you answer Bertolt's question. And Sue Goodwin, of course, has her hand up after Bertolt. Go on, Mike.
All right. So you mean ID, like say who I am again?
Yeah. And who, and yeah. And what? Yeah, exactly. The whole nine yards.
Oh, okay. All right. My name is Mike Sargent. I'm a longtime producer at WBAI. I do two programs there. I've done every program, kind of programming you could possibly imagine there. I used to, teach radio production there at WBAI. I started there in radio drama. I used to do audiobooks and theater, sound design for theater and whatnot, won some awards there. In the last 5 years, I've pivoted and become a podcast producer. I currently work for Futuro Media, which is the company that is owned by Maria Hinojosa, who is a pretty well-known journalist. She's a Latina. So it's a Latina-owned company. Futuro Media produces Latino USA and some other podcasts, Latino Rebels and In the Thick. They just won a Pulitzer for another podcast that they produced called Suave. So they won a lot of awards, and what I do there is I am the senior production manager. So for their flagship podcast, Latino USA, I basically keep the trains running. So my claim to fame there is that I've redone their entire workflow so that it's a lot more efficient. They were just not running, let's just say, as well as they could have. So I've been there about a year and a half now, but prior to that, I produced podcasts for, Wine Enthusiast Magazine, for, WBGO, for different stations. So that is who I am, but I've been at BAI for many, many years.
All right. Bert, let me just bring Sue Goodwin in and then you can answer what Bert would like to say.
Sure.
Go on, Sue.
Michael,
I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand, Sue. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I just want to ask a question and make sure that I'm correct in my understanding, which of course, as we enter into this in a stronger way, we want to build audience, we want to build revenue. But would you agree that if we don't, part of what we're trying to do is hang on to our audience, that if we don't really enter into this world, we're going to lose audience. Is, would you say that's accurate? Or is that too dire?
150% accurate. Yes, it okay. is. Well, not only will we lose audience, but we will lose what I was saying before is relevance, meaning, you know, if our audience and our potential, we have like our audience and then we have our potential audience. It's like, you know, there's a certain point where whatever our audience is, things change, people move on, people age out, people pass on. So if we want to reach the listening audience of today, we have to go podcast because, like I said, podcast and radio, it's the same thing. The difference, and to answer Bertold's question, by the way, you were saying what I meant about quality is the biggest difference between when I say podcast is radio to go, you know, what Latino USA does, what, This American Life, you know, a lot of these programs, they're like mini radio documentaries. They're well produced. They've got great sound and that's what they are. Now there are other podcasts where it's just two people talking, but even then it's mic'd well. It's usually edited. And, you know, there's some sound design, you know, so there is a certain sophistication to any quality podcast. Now, the great thing about podcasts is that anybody can have podcasts. The worst thing about podcasts is that anybody can have a podcast. So you really want to distinguish yourself, as something of quality. The content, you know, BAI has always had good content. Okay. But having, as someone who used to train people at WBAI, you know, there are a lot of people at WBAI, not only who are not trained, but who couldn't even do a program if they didn't have an engineer. Now, that being said, I come from the school of feeling like you should know how to do it all. Not everybody can do that, but I still think that we should sound as good as possible if we're going to enter into a market where people have a lot more money to spend, you know, so. You know, in terms of our business model, you know, and making money, it's going to cost money for a number of reasons in a number of ways, but it's a question of an investment into what I think is the future of the network and the future of radio.
Thank you, Michael. Anybody else want to ask questions of Michael? Please raise their hands. Obviously what Michael suggests, this is why I'm a big fanatic on training, sound art, you know, the whole nine yards. It's so essential to have that kind of skill set embedded in people coming in so we can get this kind of quality work coming out. It takes a while to do it. It's like baking a cake. But anybody else want to chime in here?
Jim?
Yeah, go on, Bertold.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, guys. I'm just stepping in all the time because You know, these are a whole lot of questions we had, and issues we were facing. So we asked Michael. Michael, you also say that, we were wrong in the way we try to figure out, which medium to use because we are trying to have a medium where we give free content. And then cut it off, to have a subscription and yet be able to do a PSA to offer advertising on our podcast. You know, I mean, we used a platform that allowed us to do all three of these things, and then to be able to control it. But you told us that, you know, it, you know, there were other better platforms. And also, we may want to really focus more on subscription as opposed to, having advertising. And, if we give open source where anybody can download the podcast in the beginning and then get them hooked until they become subscribed. Can you explain that process to everybody?
All right, well,
and the platform.
All right. Well, let me say this. The what you are thinking of in terms of potentially, or perhaps in terms of subscription is not the kind of model that is subscription now. So most podcasts, when you listen to the podcast, I'll give you, for instance, like Latino USA. Okay. And this is, you know, one of the advantages we have is that we are a radio station. So Latino USA is run on like 300 different stations, but it's also a podcast and it's on a platform and it's also distributed by PRX. So, and they, similar to, you know, any, let's just say any station where there is, sponsorship going on, regular sponsorship, there are breaks. There are breaks for, both sponsors, but then there are also those same breaks work for when you get advertisers, like straight up advertisers. Now, podcasting, when you subscribe, when you listen, if you listen to something on Spotify, Spotify's already got ads in there. Okay. There are ads in the podcast. If you put your podcast on Spotify, Spotify is going to put ads in there. They're making money on your podcast, you know, and now that's why I said in terms of how you monetize it, I feel like that's maybe a bigger or different or broader or sort of reverse engineering question. You know, do you want to go after, ads? Do you want to go after, sponsors for like the podcast network or for certain programs? What are you thinking? Do you want to go after funding? Like what business model are you thinking in terms of getting funding? I mean, there's in terms of just your basic podcast, the more listeners you have, the more downloads you have, the more you can charge or the more money you'll make per ad impression, as it were, or what they consider listening. So that's, you know, it's only to our advantage to promote it and to build our audience before we start looking for advertisers, you know. But the question is, what are we thinking? What are you thinking, Bertold? What, that's my question.
Can I say something?
Sure, please.
Go on, Alex.
Well, obviously we don't have all the answers, but Mike, I hope you will be available as sort of an advisor or consultant as we enter into this enterprise. And we do have to commit the whole network. This can't just be like a WBAI project or a KPFA project. This has to be a network wide enterprise, and we have to tap the best resources that we have in the network to get these things accomplished.
I 100% agree.
Let me just give you a little anecdote about the relevance of this issue. And back in 2019, I was at a conference in Cuba, and I met a gentleman who's an American who's a real expert in South American left-wing politics. And he was absolutely fascinating, and I thought this – it would be great to get this guy on WBAI. So I spoke to him about it, and I said, would you like me to introduce you to our program director? I think you could do a great show there. And he said, well, how many listeners would I get? And he said, right now I'm doing podcasts. I get like 8,000 hits a week. Would WBAI be able to match that? And I said, well, probably not initially. And that's where we are with this stuff. We really have to move straight into the podcast world, and we need some expert advice to get us there.
Well, Alex, this has been argued about for 10 years plus. Okay. There's been no mystery about this issue. And one thing I want to ask you, Mike, from a structural point of view is, let's say people are producing podcasts for national airing. Let's say they're sending it to Pacifica's audio port. And I'm just curious as to what your ideas would be to structure the podcast so there can be space left over for the station to do its business where the podcast is being peddled, so to speak. So in other words, on the structure of it in terms of how much room would you leave for at the beginning for intros, station business throughout, perhaps 5 minutes at the end. What's your ideas about structuring those podcasts? So if one actually creates programming, one can send it and have it versatile, and it can be applied and used in our affiliates and vice versa.
Well, this is one of the...
Hold on, Bertel. Let me just ask Michael to do this, because, you know, this is, again, something that some of us have been thinking about for quite a long time. Mike, what is your suggestions about this?
My answer... what were you going to say, Bertel?
No, I'm saying that this is one of the things that I was totally wrong about. My understanding is you don't do any station ID or anything like that. The podcast is supposed to be very, very pristine. You know, the station can do their own thing on their show, but the podcast, this is where you clean up and remove all that stuff so that the podcast, you know, really is not intrusive, and then it gives whoever is downloading it almost 100% pure content. That was my understanding of what you guys were explaining to me. Maybe I was wrong, Michael.
All right. Well, okay. Let me explain that. I understand what you're asking. And these are two separate things. I'm going to answer what you're saying, Jim, and I'm going to answer what you're saying, Bertold. Okay. Here's the thing about a podcast. The difference between a podcast and a broadcast is with a broadcast, you know, you have to do station IDs because somebody might have just tuned in. Okay. With a podcast, somebody's downloaded it. So it's not like they just tuned in. They downloaded the entire podcast. So they know if you intro, they know where they are. They know what they're listening to. So you don't really have to, re-identify the fact that you're listening to, you know, whatever network or Pacifica, you know, podcast, whatever our audio ID is. So that doesn't have to be done. But it, yes. And in regards to, and I'm going to come to this come where I come to answer your question, Jim, but also to pose questions to you. Yes. In my opinion, if you're putting out a podcast, yes, of course you should clean it up. It should be edited. It should be, what's the point? You know, like I said, like mini documentary. So it is, there's pre-production and it's cleaned up. Yes, it should sound as good as possible. It shouldn't sound like something that went out over the air that, you know, maybe there was, you know, the mic bumped or this or that. Those kind of things. Ideally, you want to put out the best quality product you can. So that's a given in my opinion. But coming back to Jim's question, it really depends on the length of the show. If you're doing a half hour show or if you're doing an hour show or like a lot of podcasts, the time changes depending on the show. Now, and that brings up a programming question. You know, I think there is value, and this is just my opinion. I think there's value to culling, let's say, five best programs. You know, every station has one program they're going to put into the network. But at the same time, if we wanted to have podcast only programs, especially considering, and I don't know if this is an issue within the network, but the, you know, we want to reach these young people. We want, you know, but we don't have time in the program. We have people who could produce, but where are we going to put them? So if you had five, let's call them legacy programs, and then five podcast only programs from, you know, where it's kind of a low stakes. Meaning, you know, you're they're trying it out. They're going to put everything they can into it, to shine wherever they are. And these are these younger people. These are people who are producing, submitting, pre-recorded, whatever you want to do. I think there's an opportunity there to gain a new audience and have sort of two teams, like the legacy team and then the podcast only team. And you're all kind of sharing information and, again, depending on what the programs are, depending on what the programming decisions are, I think there's value to that. I think there's value to expanding, that relevance and or sort of like what, Alex was saying earlier, if somebody has a podcast, okay. And again, this is what Sonoro did to us. We already had the podcast, but they wanted to make us part of their network because they need that content. So while there's always that choice too, where somebody could be doing a podcast, have already made some room in that space. They're a young person. They're a new person. They're a different voice. There's somebody we'd like to have. We bring them into our network and we all share those resources. So in answer to your question, Jim, it's really a question of how long. If you're going to be doing ads, you know, you definitely want to have a mid roll, you know, if not, and again, it depends on the kind of show you're doing. It really does. You usually want to have a billboard, an area where that's giving like a preview of the show. And I think all good podcasts do have some sort of billboard, some sort of a preview of what's coming in that show. And right after you have that preview, that's where your opportunity to drop in your ad or your station ID or your, you could be a house ad, listen to the station, listen to all the other programs. If you're doing the podcast, in my opinion, the whole idea of the podcast is not only to grow your audience, but to introduce people into the ecosystem of that station and of our network. So the podcast, we're doing our own to promote and get our audience and everything, but we also want to introduce people to the ecosystem.
Right. Very good. Very good, Michael. Do other people have comments or questions? Michael. Don't overwhelm me with your hands. Go on, Daryl. Daryl McPherson's going to present a little later. Go on, Daryl. You just have to unmute. Daryl?
Hear me now?
Yeah, go on, Daryl.
Oh, technology. Mike, having come across the cassette that I got from you many, many years ago, James West, right?
James Scott.
Okay, I'll send it back if you want.
I still have a couple.
Can we auction it off to make money for BAI? That's the point.
I've seen people selling them on eBay, just so you know. Back then, Afrofuturism was not a thing.
If there's a $1.3 million there, we'll do that. I'll donate it to the station. Okay, so when we speak podcast, we still have a challenge of audience acquisition. Is that correct?
Well, yes and no. I mean, if we pick our most popular programs, we already have an audience from the radio. We're assuming that if it was popular on the radio, it'll be popular in a podcast. And we're also assuming that there are some people who listen to the radio would be happy to have it as a podcast, that they don't have to, you know, only listen when it's on the air or only go back to the station and pull it from the archives, that they literally could subscribe, have it downloaded to their phone and listen to it at their leisure. That's the beauty of a subscription is that it's there waiting for you in your queue a la carte.
And the subscription, is that cost or is it free?
Well, subscriptions, here's the thing. That's why I come back to the monetizing model. A subscription in podcasting, nobody's paying to subscribe to any show. So, you know, you really can't reinvent the wheel there. But the question is, you know, now that you've got these ears, what are you asking them to do? Are you asking them to donate? Are you asking them to, you know, there are a million different places and ways we could ask people to donate to the network, to the station, to the show. You know, we could have advertisers. We could have a sponsor for that show. There's so many things that can be done to monetize each and every show. But I feel like the first thing to do is to get that audience. You know, it's, you know, you always, even if you were going to charge, you always want to make it free. I mean, if you remember, ATMs were free in the beginning until you got hooked on it.
Right. And see, that's a challenge of the model. What I'd like to see is a sponsorship situation as compared to hooking the fish and then wringing them dry in the context that most of the fish that we attract, are stressed to the max with commitments, right? So I'm looking for two things. One, how would you attract, quote unquote, a younger office audience? And I'm talking about 25 and below with the content that they need and are unaware that that's what they need.
Well, I think we have a couple things to our advantage. Okay. Because we are public radio and we have a music license where we can play any kind of music we want. We have a freedom to do some things that other podcasts can't do. Okay. Just because of where the content's being created. Okay. So that's one. Two, I think that our, you know, if we, a sponsorship to me makes sense, but at the end of the day, it's all going to come down to just like the guy asked Alex, well, how big is the audience? You know, and the difference with podcasts now is that that can be measured. The metrics are there. It's not like, well, we'll know how many people are listening when the Arbitrons come in. No, like it's there. So people know how many people are listening. I think we can even tell ourselves how many people are listening or on our stream. So the real challenge will be to build that audience. And in answer to your question, in my opinion, to get that younger audience at 25 and under, we have to just do programming that's relevant to them. You know, that's where I say the idea of having podcast only shows by young people, maybe, you know, maybe right. Everybody gets an, you know, there are opportunities in my opinion to get different kind of content out there and see if it works. And again, if it's not taking up airtime, it can be something, you know, as a, for instance, Bertel, we have a show that's a K-pop show. Now that's an audience. That audience is young. That audience, now, not to say that that's the show we should use, but I'm saying that audience is young. That who else is doing K-pop shows? Okay. You know, if we go after that audience, we'll be doing something. We'll be getting them on board with it.
Well, just let me share something before I go to Susan. Many years ago, Christopher Lydon, who actually was one of the people who invented the term podcasting, I was at an event with him at a conference at Columbia Journalism School, and we were talking about podcasting. And the idea came up to basically, well, maybe we should figure out ways to – this would have required an upgrade in kind of the facilities at 388 – but create a training program, like the sort of things you're talking about, because podcasting calls for high standards of production, high standards of radio art production, sound art production, but something where kids can come in and learn this. They can learn these skills, because that's who's going to create this kind of content for us. But let me bring Susan in. Go on, Susan.
Sure. Yeah. Mike, thank you very much for answering my questions, or responding to my ideas about what are starting points, because I find this very frustrating. You brought up the question of, that because we are public radio, we can use our music in a different way. Do we have any copyright problems, if we use music in our podcasts? We aren't at liberty to do that, are we?
Well, I feel like, and I'm not certain here, but from what I understand, and maybe you can answer this, Berthold, what is our music license that we every year that like when we have to, what are we paying for exactly?
Bertold maybe can answer. We're paying to be on to be able to use it on the air.
Right. But what is it?
I don't know if we can, you know, if there's essentially the opportunity to duplicate it and publish it more broadly.
Well, again, we do it. We have it on the archive so people can download it. So what is the difference?
Music programs are only on the archives for a limited period of time.
Okay. Mike.
I think there are some restrictions, but this
well, is I'm just saying there are some restrictions, but we may have.
This is obviously an issue that we'd have to get some expert guidance. Opinion about before we go ahead. But I just want
and it would determine some of the shows that we are able to do.
Let me just throw something out. I really like your idea of having like the best of like five legacy producers and five young new producers. I was thinking the way to monetize this would be for Pacifica to provide its own podcasting platform on its website and have a subscription service. Could be a very inexpensive subscription service, and we can have a limited number of the podcasts available for free, the way a lot of subscription services do. And maybe that's the way to go in this. But, you know, obviously there are many other things we can try. But what I would like to do proceeding from this meeting is have create some kind of an ongoing working group that would include some of the people that are present tonight, as well as some of the Pacifica program directors and technology people to really drive along the steps to implement something in this area.
Well, I agree. Is that a motion you want to make, Alex?
Okay, you can call it a motion.
Well, okay, let's say that, that we will create a podcast working group that will include people from the network and management and staff, plus outside folks to help us, because trust me, there are plenty of people to do that and raring to go. I'm not writing it down, but you guys hear the gist of it. Is there any opposition to that kind of motion? All right, hearing none, we'll create a working group. One thing I know
can
that...
Can I ask Mike what he thinks about my idea for monetizing this thing?
Well, actually, I do think that that's a good idea. I think two things. I think one, I think whatever we do, it should be free in the beginning. Okay. Two, I do like the idea of a tier, you know, and a support tier. And I think the idea similar to, let's say what, you know, Apple or any of these services, just if it's some, you know, if something is a couple dollars a month, people won't care. It's 99 cents a month, you know, but if you've got 5,000 people giving you 99 cents a month, that's $5,000 a month. So I feel like that makes sense, you know, and the whole idea is you're encouraging them to subscribe at that tier as a support tier, you know what I mean? But something really inexpensive, something they won't feel. I think that that's the best way to go, in my opinion, so that they don't feel like, you know, they feel they're doing something. But again, this to me also comes back to your mission, you know, and the mission of Pacifica, you know, whether it's, you know, restating it, condensing it, putting it out there. But I feel like this is an opportunity. It's not just about like, oh, we're going to start making podcasts. This is an opportunity to rebrand Pacifica to an audience potentially that doesn't know them, and reestablish ourselves to an audience that already knows of us. Or as I often hear, oh, I used to listen to WBAI. So, you know, you want to get people to know that you're here. I don't know if that makes sense to everybody, but that's just my thought.
Well, actually, somebody's writing from the audience, a Pacifica station membership fee should include podcasting fee, which is essentially what you just said, Mike. That I think would be an interesting concept. And then this person also writes, well, he critiques the idea of two teams during this transition. I don't agree with that. I think we need a lot of teams, frankly. We must reinforce legacy radio broadcasting, even if people are merely streaming from the Pacifica station webpage, as well as broadcasting platforms casting the same station broadcast going out from the transmitter, but on demand. Well, I think we agree with that. Yeah, I think we agree with that. Does anybody else have comments to make about this before we go on? All right, no comments at this point from anybody else? All right, well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us tonight talking about this.
I hope it was helpful.
And you can certainly stay because we're going to talk about something else I'd sort of like to get your impression about. This has to do with using search engines to raise money. Daryl McPherson, can you unmute? Daryl? Now, Daryl is, Daryl, yeah, thank you, Daryl. Can you unmute, Daryl?
Does that work?
There you go, Daryl. Okay, so Daryl McPherson is a WBI member. He's been talking about a particular issue with us for months about raising money, and I wanted to bring it to the attention of my colleagues around the country. Daryl, why don't you go on and tell people about Good Search and what you have discovered and your thinking about it is.
Right. And, all right. So my name is Daryl McPherson. I listened to WBAI. I really want to get that $1.3 million raised before January so I can keep listening to WBAI. And so what I've discovered was I came across a platform founded by the Rambergs. I think it's Ken and JJ Ramberg. They wanted to give back to the community. So they developed a shopping platform called Good Shop. And similar to Amazon Smile, they give a percentage back of the, if you shop on their, through their platform. So you go to their platform first and then you pick out the store that you want to shop from. They give a percentage of their shopping to the cause of choice. Well, someone back in the 90s registered BAI as a cause of choice. On that platform, you have a subsidiary platform called Good Search. Good Search is powered by Yahoo. And for each search, you can earn a penny for your choice of for your cause of choice. So you translate it into $1 million is 10,000, 1 million searches is $10,000. So what you would be doing is everyone who you invite on the air, we invite any number of nonprofits to be on the air, especially on BAI. We get everybody registered with Good Shop. We have the members register at Good Search. That way they're, the asking for a credit card is, I'm trying to say this positively, so give me a chance here. You don't have to ask for a credit card. I'll just do it next. All right. So all that's required to register for a Good Search is an email address and a password that you make up. Then you get to choose penny to go. Currently this year, I've did to W simply through searching. So the potential is there, especially for older people, for people who are incarcerated, to do mass searching. And rather than giving Google the money, you're giving Pacifica the money. And then what you would do in return for the nonprofits that participate is that you have your station say, well, today we're all going to search for XYZ cause of choice. The example I like to use is there are 1 million children in the New York City Department of Education. If we could convince the chancellor to implement searching with Good Search rather than that other G engine, every time a child searches, all million children search, that's $10,000. So if you got a problem with your school, you just need everybody to search to get information that they're going to get, that they need to get anyway. And boom, it's over. And so what we do is we search for each other so that we can become prosperous and snatch some of that money into our hands that we can then mold into something more prescient than what we're currently looking at.
All right. Thank you, Michael. And also I understand there is the possibility to use other platforms for this purpose, like Amazon or other platforms?
Right. There's Amazon Smile. And during this part of the year, I mean, we probably could have done bang up business during Black Friday. However, whenever you decide to register, I haven't used Amazon Smile. Bruce Grief would be a better person to talk about Amazon Smile than I would. However, you have Amazon Smile, you have PayPal, and my understanding is each transaction with PayPal, they give a dollar to the charity of choice. Now, Pacifica KPFT is registered there. So I was looking for feedback to see whether they're making any money, and how often they're able to get the money from the institution that's raising it. Those are the things that need to be ironed out. Can we get more frequently than a once a year payout? Can we improve upon the dashboard that gives the immediate gratification to the searcher to see their capital lodged with the cause that they've chosen? Can we get a more accurate way than a cumulative, like a yearly breakout for what the cause is earning from the searching and then from the shopping? I see some of that. However, I'm unclear as to how to actually dice it out, and I've got emails into them, and when I get answers, I'll pass them along to Jim, and he can pass them along to you. But there are ways that what my ideal would be is to get an investigative reporter to go in and investigate what platforms have what models, what would be best for Pacifica to use, and then eventually find some smart person who's into coding and develop our own platform. And that way you could design it directly to what your needs are. And at the same time, you're denying Google that penny and you're giving it to yourself, because people are going to shop with Amazon. If they're going to shop with Amazon, you might as well be getting some money at it. And it, with regard to good search, pretty straightforward. And if you go to goodsearch.org and in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see three vertical lines. You touch the three vertical lines for a drop-down menu. You can go for choose a cause, and you can actually see the dashboard for WBAI. You have to put it in exactly, or else it'll tell you that it doesn't exist. So the dashboard for WBAI is all in capitals, WBAI space, hyphen space, 99.5 space, FM. Then touch the name of the organization and it'll show you the dashboard. It'll show you the number of people over the period of time that have donated. You can find out that, how much the person has donated. And then if it's you, I think that there's a breakout in which you get how much you personally have donated. Any questions?
All right. Well, thank you. And I should also add that Michael is a member of the WBAI Community Advisory Board. Does anybody have any questions for Michael? Oh, excuse me, for Dale.
Just a comment.
Yeah, go on, Alex.
If you use the Chrome browser, and other browsers have this feature too, you can set up a default search engine in there. And usually it's Google, but I assume you could put in Good Search instead of Google if you want. So that way you don't have to go.
As a matter of fact, Alex.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when you go to goodsearch.org, I believe that there's an option. I shouldn't do that. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can see it. There's an option and it offers you the option of doing it in Chrome. And it's setting the default browser.
Okay. So they're doing the setting themselves when you go there. Okay. That's good.
So you are able to do that if you make that choice. And I just want to verify it for you. I wish Jim that you could put up the dashboard so that
I can do that.
This month.
Yeah, let John do that. I'm not as
John,
good as
John. How are you?
Good. How are you? I'm catching up to you, Daryl.
Catching up to me, right?
I'm catching up to you in good searches.
Oh yeah, well, to tell him your experience, John, because you just started.
Okay, so you guys should be able to see my screen, and these are your top contributors, and you can see Daryl is number two at $75, and I am number whatever that would be, 8, and I just started like 3 months ago, so like nobody's using this, right? And it only, like, if a couple hundred people use this, like, you would have a significant amount of money here. I don't think you could see in the upper right, raised $1,480 since the program began. And it's really concentrated in an incredibly small number of people. And Alex is right. You can make an extension to Chrome. There's an extension to Chrome for Good Search. And so, when I go and search, I don't know if I can do it or not. Let's see. Oh, hold on. We'll just go here. That's probably not good. Blah, blah, blah. Here we go. So when I open a new window, it just goes to Good Search, and Good Search basically uses Yahoo. It doesn't use Google, but the search is a search at some point. So it just automatically opens Good Search instead of Google. That's the only difference.
All right. Any more questions for Daryl on this? All right. Because this is something that has been discussed many times in New York. And, you know, I didn't know anything about it until Daryl brought it to our attention. But anybody have any more comments to Daryl about this? Because imagine if we had thousands and thousands of people using Good Search in each station area. Go on, Sue. Yes, Susan.
Michael,
no, Michael's gone. Michael left. Okay. This is Daryl.
Well, I was going to ask him and just remind everybody of what you already know, which is as we, you know, advance into this, we are promoting ourselves at three levels. So for every podcast, we're promoting that host, that show, but we're also promoting the station they are connected to. And very important, we are selling the Pacifica brand. So we have to be promoting at all three levels, I think, to develop loyalty.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, this is a dimension that has not, many of us have been arguing about these kind of things for quite a long time. So I'm glad we're finally taking them seriously and trying to do something about it. Anyway, any more comments, Susan, before?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Anybody else have anything to say about this, what Daryl had to say in particular about these ways to monetize the station in different ways we've not thought of before? All right, hearing none.